This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
A lot of misinformation that people are trying to wade through as they're attempting to decide on this measure. I think most people probably know by now that this was fast-tracked and there was a city council vote. And so maybe if you could tell people how this ended up on the ballot, are you familiar with that process?
I am. I mean, there's a couple steps. I mean, obviously, our campaign gathered over 43,000 signatures in less than a month to put this to vote. So that happened very quickly because there was a lot of public concern about the policy. Mm-hmm. And then we were supposed to vote on this when we gathered the signatures for May of 2014.
That's right.
That was fast-tracked up by a year. Randy Leonard supported that decision. However, Commissioner Amanda Fritz did not. And one of the primary reasons for that is that we need to look at things like the rate increase. It's an open-ended bill at this point in time. And there are other issues such as the emerging science. In other cities, they actually gathered independent reviews of scientists to look at the policy and the lack of safety and effectiveness and the cost to consumers for the policy. And we did not allow that here on this fast-track vote. So here we are without as much time to educate our citizens on these important facts.
Well, there is one thing I noticed, which was that the measure in the voters' pamphlet is really silent on the cost. And so as the public, it makes you wonder because it has a little note that says something about the measure funds fluoridation through water user fees.
Correct. So essentially, this will be funded by our water rate prices going up. So those of us that use water, the rates will increase. And we know that this puts people in lower income at significant risk. So that's one issue. In addition, if you look at the language of that, it's an open-ended bill. It is not yet defined. And there are many aspects that even according to the Portland Water Bureau internal documents haven't been fully, you know, put on paper. For example, 40% of our water users have long-term contracts that allow them not to necessarily pay for this bill. The Portland Water Bureau has used numbers assuming that these other districts will be paying for water fluoridation. That's not a given. In addition, the downstream effects, the effects on the environment and or salmon migration, et cetera, have not been included. And even the operation and maintenance costs, you know, they estimate about $500,000 a year, roughly. You know, it appears compared to other cities with such programs that that's a very low number. Mm-hmm. The point to citizens really being, if you read the language, it's not defined. And as we know with the Portland Water Bureau and our recent water rate increases, this will surely go up and we will be paying for that bill.
If you'd like to join Kelly and I in this conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. Are you for or against water fluoridation? What are your questions? Do you have questions that you need answered before you get your ballot? If so, give us a call and we'll try to answer them. One of the things that you said was really interesting to me because nowhere in this measure does it talk about actually building a plant. And a plant has to be built, right? There has to be a water fluoridation kind of process that takes place.
Correct. And according to the internal documents from Portland Water Bureau, that's estimated to be up to $7.6 million. So that cost will be absorbed by the rate increases of water that we'll be paying from the citizens in Portland.
And so I want to ask you, why do you think so many well-meaning people think this is a good idea?
You know, as a parent that once thought this was a great policy, mm-hmm. I will simply say that the discussion doesn't fit into sound bites. Mm-hmm. And let's be honest, those in support of water fluoridation have a lot of money. There's been a lot of media, and a lot of it's been factually incorrect. Mm-hmm. And it takes a little bit of stepping out of the sound bites and at least 10 minutes of having a larger discussion to have other perspectives be heard. Mm-hmm. One of those that I'll be very honest about is even that of how we're compared to Seattle. Mm-hmm. You know, you see that all over, you know, the TV ads, the radio ads, you know, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And one thing that's important about that is that statistic is something about untreated dental decay. Mm-hmm. And untreated dental decay is about access to Dennis.
Yes.
So that's really important for citizens to know. In addition, Seattle and Portland have many demographic differences. According to census data, there's a median income that's higher in Seattle, about $10,000 to $15,000. Mm-hmm. We also have about 27% more families below the level of poverty in Oregon than Washington. There's more low-income clinics available in Washington. And there's also less dental professional shortages. All this is documented. You know, you can see these on websites. Mm-hmm. I think that's really important to talk about. And when you look at a city like Vancouver in Washington that's been fluoridated for over 30 years, they still had untreated dental decay in their low-income populations in 2005. It wasn't until they created new initiatives called ABCD that they actually dropped that by 50% in their low-income communities. Mm-hmm. I think that's very relevant to discuss.
So it's about dental care. Well, the callers have stacked up since we started talking, so we're going to go to the phone line. Hello, Frost. Welcome to KBOO.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Yeah, this is very very much a debate in my house as well as, like, I know, you know, abroad. Curiously enough, I think you guys really touch on a great point with, you know, it's a dental issue. You know, if we're fluoridating the water, and the consumption of, you know, water by people to, you know, to affect dental care would be, what, like 10 to 20%, and the rest of 80% maybe you'd be using for watering lawns, washing cars. I think that to be the most compelling argument against it, you know, as far as, you know, point of use.
Mm-hmm.
What is your, do you guys have the statistics on how much water is used for, like, non-consumption, let's say for showering and such?
Correct. According to American Water Works Association, the data is that 90% of water fluoridation goes downstream, and some people say as high as 95%. And also, it's important to note that we can't filter this out with normal filtrations like a Brita or Multipure. It can only be filtered out with reverse osmosis. They're highly inefficient in regards to water volume that goes downstream. And when our city is working so hard on, you know, sewage repairs, etc., it's important to consider that and total cost analysis.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And, you know, I think, you know, I guess my thought would be, you know, could we get a, you know, with, you know, kindergarten, preschool, you know, as far as, you know, dental programs, and there's a lot of, you know, cases out there that show that, you know, that's much more effective, you know, using resources.
Right. And
resources.
I don't know if you were listening earlier, and we talked about the Healthy Kids Initiative at the state level, which includes dental care. And so we're seeing this massive reduction in dental disease because guess what? Poor kids are getting dentists, right?
So, yeah, there's a couple points to that. Just to give you the statistics that came out on Smile 2012 survey, and I'll remind your viewers, this was not released by the state willingly. This was only released because there was a media request through K2 that had been working on the research for weeks. So Multnomah County is down in cavity rates 10%. The state of Oregon is down 19%. One thing that's really interesting to look at, in 2009, the state of Oregon really pushed the Healthy Kids, Healthy Oregon, you know, initiative plan, giving our low-income kids access to dental care and medical insurance. And what's interesting about that, in 2009, we had 11.6% of our kids not enrolled, and then it dropped in 2012 to 5.6. This further reflects that access is working and better alternatives. In addition, the First Tooth program really picked up, which was partially federally funded, which really trains primary care interventionists, doctors, and nurses to recognize risk before these kids are in school, and that's similar to the ABCD program in Vancouver and what the state of Washington that works so well. Better alternatives are working here. We are on non-fluoridated water. And when you go to the K2 piece, you'll see that Portland public non-fluoridated schools actually have a better dental decay rate than fluoridated cities in our community. And that's worth asking why. And why are we not talking about true Multnomah County and Portland statistics?
Thank you. Thank you for your call.
Follow the money.
That's
Thank
my.
You so much.
That's always my motto. Thank you for your call. We're going to go to the next caller. Hello, Megan. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have an idea for another alternative, and that is to not let people buy food with high fructose corn syrup on food stamps.
Oh, so only poor people should be prevented from buying high sugar food?
Well, I think everybody said that should be out of the food in general, but if we're going to be left as poor people without a choice to have fluoride in our water, I think it would be better to just simply not have the choice to buy food that doesn't really contain any beneficial nutrients and does cause a lot of problems, not only with teeth, but with general health.
Okay. I'm sorry. Were you done? I'm going to ask Kelly to respond.
So a couple of thoughts about that. I mean, obviously, this is a larger discussion. However, we do know that there are communities at risk for dental decay. But what's interesting to note is what's really working for these communities, these vulnerable children in our communities. What's really working when we look across the nation at communities that have been fluoridated for decades, and this policy has not been effective in helping low-income kids, what's really working is the better alternatives. And while I do support having, you know, less sugar available in our food systems in general, we're not talking about just asking low-income families to have their kids brush teeth or not drink soda. What we're asking in our campaign is that we put our energy and our ambition into better alternatives that are working throughout this country, and that we help those in need, including, you know, English as a second language. Maybe we can have more translators. Maybe we can have more ways of getting these kids into these programs that are already available.
Maybe we could create dental assistants that would actually serve low-income community members better.
I think. Would love to talk about that. Yeah. Because if anybody remembers the Tribune article a few weeks ago, there is a pilot study that's been approved here in the state for dental therapists. And it's working in Alaska and low-income communities in Minnesota, which is a cost-effective way for dental access. However, worth noting that the National Dental Association is lobbying against it, and at least in the article reported that at Oregon Health Universities, they're not supporting training these therapists in Oregon currently.
Huh, interesting. Thank you so much for your call. Have a great day. What's coming up today on The Boo? At 9 here, Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, host Paris speaks with Michael Clare about how the two trends of growing resource scarcity and climate change are creating a formula for future disruption and collapse. At 10, hear flashpoints with coverage of immigration and worker rights issues related to May Day yesterday. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Jennifer Kemp looks at the new novel Cha-Ching, a story of what it means to be young and broke in America. At 11:30 on Black Book Talk, Clinton Galloway discusses his book, Anatomy of a Hustle. Cable comes to South Central Los Angeles, the story of two brothers setting out to better their community by establishing the first Black-owned cable franchise in the country. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a member yet, you can go to kboo.fm and click Donate Today. Thank you. And we're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Sean. Welcome to KBOO.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
This is a really confusing issue for me because the people I hate the most in the world, the John Birch Society and Alex Jones,
right,
are really opposed to fluoridation of the water. And the people I usually most trust, the public health professionals that I think deserve a lot more respect and power, they're in favor of fluoridation. So I was wondering if you could just touch on the history of the right-wing conspiracies from the John Birch Society, even in like films like Dr. Strangelove that are, you know, that mock the John Birch Society for being anti-fluoridation. Thanks.
Thank you for your question.
You know, in regards to conspiracy theory, I cannot talk about that at all. My interest in this started as a concerned parent when I started looking at the literature and seeing that even the CDC says that the benefit of fluoridation is topical, not systemic. I then looked at the source of product, was very surprised to see arsenic and lead and other heavy metals, even on the CDC website and the NSF data sheet, showing that this is a real concern to our kids. We're talking about improving the health of our children. We surely shouldn't knowingly add more arsenic and lead and other heavy metals. In addition, something that's important to talk about historically, let's think about our public health officials and governments that have for decades recommended things that were, according to them, safe and effective, such as lead and asbestos. Mm-hmm. We don't have to go back very far to see that science changes before policy, and this is only a matter of time for that to catch up as well.
And I will also say that even though I agree with the caller that there are really people I respect on both sides of the issue, communities of color should take a closer look when public health entities come saying, we're here to help and we're doing this just for you, because, you know, our experience in the United States of America is that normally it's not to our benefit. And certainly not saying anything about the folks that are involved in this particular campaign at this time. But if you look historically, that's never a good reason to do it, just because the powers that be say it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, and also worth mentioning, there are some civil rights leaders that are opposing this policy, mostly around the risk of fluorosis to children of color, and particularly the infant advisory warning that's even on the CDC own website about consuming water in formula if it's fluoridated.
Right. We've got callers stacked up again, so we're going to try to be really quick with the questions and responses. Hello, Dan. Welcome to KBOO.
Well, yeah, it ties in with what you just brought up about the science changing, and I have 2 points. One real quick. About science, I didn't go into science as a profession, but I could have. I love science and have my whole life for long, and so I have a whole library, I don't know, 150, 200 books on science, and a lot of it's on medicine, and so it's a lifelong interest. And the one thing I wanted to get across to people, because I know a lot of people don't follow science, is that science is an area where mostly there are unknowns. And anybody that starts to read about this debate, it becomes pretty obvious there's a lot of unknowns about the effects of fluoride. And that should be enough right there to not put it in everyone's drinking water. So I just wanted to emphasize that science...
You make a great point on that. And if you look at the National Academy of Science Review, they clearly say we desire more research. There's a reasonable basis for concern here, and we need further research before we can say that this is safe and effective for everyone. That's not a direct quote. That's my paraphrasing of the review. They're asking for more research.
I'll point out one page, because there are so many pages in the voter's pamphlet. Go to page 75. I found that to be one of the best pages on the science.
Thank you
page
so 75. Much.
The second point I make.
I'm sorry. I'm going to have to go to another caller. We got callers stacked up. Thank you for your call. Appreciate it. Hello, Marie. Welcome to KBOO.
Yes, thank you very much. Wonderful program. And I have a quote here, and it's by the president of the Coalition of African American Pastors. And the title of this article is Black Pastors Speak Out Against Water Fluoridation. I'll give you the source after I read the quote.
Real quick, okay.
It says, Pastor Owens said, African Americans have more kidney disease and more diabetes, but nobody elected to tell us that kidney patients and diabetics are more susceptible to harm from ingested fluoride.
Thank you. I guess that says it all, huh?
Yeah, that goes back to the National Academies of Science Review showing those individuals with diabetes, kidney disease, thyroid disease, and infants more at harmful effects from this policy. Thank you.
And one of the interesting things is that we don't talk about the fact that kids don't drink water, and so for some assumption, we think that this is going to be helpful. We don't talk about the fact that the impact on plants and animals and our food supply and et cetera, et cetera. That's not even part of the conversation when we're talking about fluoridation. But we're going to go back to the phone line.
Dante.
Hello, Dante. Welcome to KBOO.
Oh, hi. I'm going to be quick here.
Thank you.
I just wanted to mention, I live in, I'm not sure that I will be voting on this issue because I live in Clackamas County. However, I got an elections measures pamphlet, which does have it included.
Right.
But the thing I noticed was there is not even one single argument in opposition.
I can comment to that. Thank
you so much for your call.
Honest about that. That's simply a fundraising issue. We've been outfunded 5-1. If anybody wants to go to our campaign and donate money so we can have an oppositional perspective, I highly suggest that. Clean Water Portland. And we just had to make a decision. We needed to educate where most of the voters are voting on this issue, and that's Portland. The surrounding districts that will be drinking our water do not have the option to vote on this issue.
And what's my voter's pamphlet has lots of arguments in opposition, so I'm not sure.
He's speaking about Clackamas and the other voter guides in the other district.
I see.
That
was because they're not
That was simply a fundraising issue. Oh, right, most of the citizens in those districts will not be voting on this particular
right,
issue.
Right, so they didn't need to have, you didn't need to fund those arguments. Okay, we got another caller.
Tim.
Hey, Tim, welcome to K-Boo.
Hey, thank you. I just wanted to chime in on this issue. I'm absolutely opposed to fluoride being added to Portland's water system. I grew up in Portland, and 50 years ago, my mother was asked by our dentist if we wanted to participate in an experimental fluoridation or fluoride treatments. And I am the beneficiary of that successful experiment, and all of my siblings, none of us have any major problems with tooth decay. The fillings that we did get over our childhood were only primary layer fillings, and so the fluoride had a very beneficial effect on our tooth enamel.
Okay.
So here's my point. It's like I really believe that we should not put it into the water system because of the environmental damage. If you look at the wide use of antidepressants now, which are being detected in fish,
right?
It's not necessary to use the shotgun approach. I think that we could give fluoride in the form of toothpaste and mouthwashes out for free and have a much, much better
impact
without fluoridating the water system.
Thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. We're going to try to squeeze in one more caller if we can.
Hello. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Hello, Mark. Welcome to K-Boo.
Yes, I'm here. I have a daughter at Rosemary Heights Elementary School, Portland Public Schools, and they have a fluoride program in place where they offer at no cost to parents or students a fluoride tablet each day.
Right.
So I don't understand the point to add fluoride to the water when these low-income children that they're speaking of go to school.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the call.
Have a good day.
You too. I think we could squeeze that last caller in. Especially if she's short and sweet to the point. Hello, Joanne. Welcome to K-Boo.
Oh, that's not fair. Anyway, all this intellectual stuff and analysis is not necessary. It's plain common sense. And the bottom line and truth is fluoride should not be in any water anywhere.
Thank you, Joanne. Have a good day. Well, I have to say I'm really surprised that no one from the proponent side thought it was worthwhile to call in. And so I think that's enlightening in and of itself. I want to thank you very much, Kelly. So we should tell people where to get more information if they want to get involved in the campaign.
Absolutely. We want and desire more volunteers to hit the streets. Go to cleanwaterportland.org and volunteer. Come down to our office, get yard signs, and please, $20 goes a long way.
Excellent. Any big things coming up? That we should, well, of course, the ballots are hitting the mailbox this weekend. That's the big thing right now.
Absolutely. And again, we're doing walk and talks on the weekends, and there will be another debate held by Buckman Neighborhood Association. I believe that's on the 9th.
I think that's right. That's right. You and I are going
to
be
there. Yes, and you can also go to Multnomah County Dems if people want more information through a prior debate that was held, and Rick North was there as well as myself and Dr. Mike Plunkett on the other side. So if citizens want more information, they can go to those links.
And I want to thank you. You know, it takes a lot to go from being a business owner to being an activist. And I want to thank you for just taking the time to jump in, because being a mom, being a business owner, you know, there's a lot of things you could be doing with your time.
You're very welcome. I feel it's important, and citizens deserve to be educated.
Yes, we do, and we deserve to have pure drinking water, and we deserve to have politicians that tell us the truth. Thank you again for listening to Voices from the Edge. It looks like we've got maybe another minute or so. So I guess one of the things is there are people this weekend that are going to be really struggling, right? They're going to look at their voters pamphlet and say, there are people I know on both sides of this issue. What do you think is going to be the best way for people to make a decision on this vote? What's the simple solution for folks to make a decision?
I think people should really ask themselves, does it knowingly make sense to add more arsenic, lead, and heavy metals to our water when the ultimate health is improving, the ultimate goal is improving the health of our kids, when there's better alternatives like the Healthy Kids Plan that's working in Oregon, First Tooth, etc.? I mean, does it really make sense when the science shows a reasonable basis for concern?
I think I couldn't have said it better myself. Thank you so much. I am Joanne Hardesty. You have been listening to Voices from the Edge, and we will see you next week. Same time, same place, same station. Have a great day.
Stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up. Stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up. Stand up. Stand up for
morning from KBOO. You are listening to KBOO Portland, and it's just about 9 o'clock here. Coming up at 9:30 on Fight the Empire, host Per Fogering speaks with Michael Clare about how the two trends of growing resource scarcity and climate change are creating a formula for future disruption, social unrest, state collapse, and, in the long run, catastrophe. At 10, hear flashpoints with coverage of immigration and workers' issues related to May Day yesterday. At 11, on Between the Covers, host Jennifer Kemp interviews Ali Liegbutt about her new novel, Ka-ching, or Cha-ching, a story about what it means to be young and broke in America. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, Clinton Galloway discusses his book Anatomy of a Hustle. Cable comes to South Central L.A., the story of two brothers setting out to better their community by establishing the first black-owned cable franchise in the country. But first, coming up in just a minute or so, it's Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell, and that's up next on KBOO.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New mobile applications available for iPhone and Android. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
And it's also brought to you thanks to a grant from Merrill Hearst University's new Bachelor of Arts in Media and Film Studies, where you can explore how media in all forms affect not only how we view the world, but how we shape it. You'll learn the power of media and how you can use that power to become a participant in change. Now accepting applications. Details at merrillhearst.edu/KBOO.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for the news you're not supposed to know. Seattle and national corporate media are reporting that the May Day March turned violent at the end. There are photographs and video of young men in Seattle throwing things, rocks, breaking glass, that sort of thing. I turned to Seattle Indie Media to find out the truth and discovered that it is apparently kaput. Another community media source dead. Scary, isn't it? But I was at Portland's May Day protest, and the only sour note was the appearance of the plastic-clad troops and the police soundtrack. I remember when there was violence at the International Workers' Day marches in Portland. It's happened several times, and each time it has been caused by police. 1999, I remember particularly, I broadcast the audio right here on Press Watch on KBOO, and it sort of went like this. You could hear people going, yeah, 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 rabble, 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 sort of happy sounds. Then you heard this great eek, and the eek was Mark Croker, the Nazi. He's been photographed with a Nazi uniform on, and he wasn't joking. Mark Croker, chief of police, had given a radio order to attack, and the eek was people running as all-terrain vehicles went crashing into the crowd. It was something. And things haven't changed, really. If there are not sufficient hot-headed teens around to throw rocks, historically, well, cops will provide a few. Here's the message: fear dissent. And don't forget to fear. From Truth Out, posted yesterday, an attorney who represented prisoners detained at Guantanamo Bay was found dead last week in what sources said was a suicide. Andy Hart, 38 years old, a federal public defender in Toledo, Ohio, died of a, they say, self-inflicted gunshot wound. Hart left behind a suicide note and a thumb drive believed to contain his case files. It is unknown where Hart died, what the suicide note said, or whether an autopsy was performed, or what has happened to his 11-year-old daughter. Hart's death comes amid escalating chaos that has engulfed Guantanamo over the past 3 months, from a mass hunger strike to military commissions and renewed pressure on the White House to shut down the prison facility. Hart was one of 36 Guantanamo attorneys who signed a letter in March urging Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel to take immediate action to bring about an end to the hunger strike. Because Hart was a federal employee working on sensitive legal issues, the FBI was contacted about his death. Is unknown if the agency has been investigating the circumstances surrounding his death. More on FBI investigations. Can you hear the quotation marks? In a minute. Neither the FBI nor local law enforcement officials in Toledo, Ohio, returned calls for comments. A phone number listed for Hart was disconnected yesterday. Suicide. Now here's a bit of news you're not supposed to figure out. Syria has not used chemical weapons. What? Didn't you see the headlines? Syria uses chemical weapons? Syria has